in the report that we're working on. So just to sum up very briefly what my colleague Diego has and bridge this directly to our report, our starting point is that in trying to meet our ambitious climate targets, we have taken strategies which are primarily centered on achieving decarbonization for deploying new technologies, such as, for example, electrolyzers and other solutions which are heavy on critical raw material use. And while these solutions do help us meet some of the current emission reduction targets, they fundamentally rely on increased resource extraction and use, and they do not challenge the trends associated with overconsumption, like my colleague has just mentioned, but indeed lead to increased extractivism. And I think Jody on the previous panel has done a stellar job of really landing what that extractivist approach means in terms of its social and ecological costs. So when we think about a current policy approach to critical raw material management, we can classify the different types of interventions across the stages of the life cycle of resource use. So you can have a look on the table, what are the different policies that we are considering so far and how we have grouped them. We're also looking at what is their potential to reduce demand, A, and B, to reduce negative externalities associated with resource extraction and use. So you can have a look through the table, but I want to especially draw your attention to the first row marked as sufficiency, which refers to policies which fundamentally challenge resource use in the first place, effectively preventing resource extraction and overconsumption. And what that means in practice is policies like better infrastructure and urban planning, which means we don't, for example, each need to own an electric vehicle because we can rely on infrastructure that is provided to meet those transport needs. Similarly, a four-day work week, research has shown, has an impact on reducing resource use because we find that in that additional time, people actually tend to resort to activities which are less resource intensive. For example, they tend to take a walk in the park. So moving on, despite that those solutions focus on sufficiency and addressing the fundamental demand side have highest potential to reduce the negative externalities of resource extraction and use. These are least prominent in the current policy approach. So you can see that on the graph. This is just an illustrative figure based on our preliminary research. But if we think about the current policy approach, it's very heavy on design. It's heavy on consumer behavior and trying to recover some value of the resources at end of life, for example, for incineration or recycling. But the demand side is a blind spot in the current policy approach. And that is unfortunately a huge weakness. So again, when we think about that approach and kind of go beyond addressing emissions reduction targets to thinking about successfully addressing current ecological and social crises more broadly, we can see that those interventions we're currently resorting to are relatively low impact. So recycling or product labeling, circular design, et cetera, they do help us achieve emissions reduction. In that sense, they're absolutely necessary. But unfortunately, they fail in that they often are associated with, for example, increased CRM extraction and use, which is associated with other ecological and social costs. And what is fundamentally missing in the current policy approach are those solutions which are more transformative, such as, for example, a four-day work week or new urban planning strategies. And at the very end of this spectrum, but beyond the scope of our research, is of course fundamentally rethinking how the current socioeconomic system operates, which is very high potential. So bringing this back to intergenerational justice, as well as intergenerational justice, how do we think about policies, the current policy approach, as well as potential policies which seek to achieve those goals? So essentially to define intergenerationally and intragenerationally just policy approaches, we consider two dimensions. So first, are the benefits long-term or are they short-term? So this means, for example, that thinking about the impact of CRM extraction 50 or 100 years down the line? What is that impact on ecosystem destruction, water pollution, displacement of indigenous communities, etc.? So these are the factors we want to take into account when thinking about the distribution rates between current generations and future generations. And then looking at intergenerational, just thinking about is, are the benefits restrictive in their nature? So do they only benefit some specific groups? Or are the benefits more widespread and equally distributed? So what that means is, for example, if the current policy approach relies on, as previous panelists have discussed as well, increased CRM extraction in the global south to then be able to deploy decarbonization strategies in the global north, with the global north communities being the primary beneficiaries, that is not an approach that we would consider as one which advances intragenerational justice, because it benefits primarily then the global north communities. Of course, this is a more nuanced picture, but this is one of the trends that we're seeing. Equally, if extraction of critical raw materials means, for example, displacing of indigenous communities, that again means that the benefits are restricted to some groups and take place at the expense of other groups. So considering these two dimensions, unfortunately, our current approach to decarbonization and critical raw material management seems to be falling somewhere around that bottom red box. This is, of course, an illustrative view, so it's hard to very clearly place it, but we can see that the benefits are not long-term because we're overreaching on other planetary boundaries while trying to reach short-term emission reduction targets. And equally, we're not pursuing intergenerational justice because the benefits are restricted to some groups at the expense of other groups. So if we stop to consider a moment, the implications of this are crucial, because if the current policy approach can deliver neither inter nor intragenerational justice, then how can we really justify it? And I will leave you with that question and hand over to my colleague to explore some of the solutions in more detail. Thank you.
Perfect, thanks. So Diego has set out a convincing case for why we should think about demand, and Natalia has given us a few key frameworks and ideas that we could use to consider the demand side of the equation and why we should do that. What I want to do in my section of the presentation is to run you through